The reading this morning is from 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 32 through 51, even though it says 50 in your bulletin. We're adding that last little one there. David said to Saul, "Let no one's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine." Saul said to David, "You are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are just a boy, and he has been a warrior from his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant has killed both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, since he has defied the armies of the living God." David said, "The Lord who saved me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will save me from the hand of the Philistine." So Saul said to David, "Go, and may the Lord be with you." So he took his staff in his hand, and he chose 5 smooth stones from the wadi and put them in his shepherd's bag, in the pouch. His sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. The Philistine came on and drew near to David, and the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and to the wild animals of the field." But David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This very day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. And I will give the dead bodies of the Philistine army this very day to the birds of the air and to the wild animals of the earth, so that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord does not save by sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand." When the Philistine drew nearer to meet David, David ran quickly towards the battle line to meet the Philistine. David put his hand in his bag, took out a stone, slung it, and struck the Philistine on his forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face down on the ground. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, striking down the Philistine and killing him. There was no sword in David's hand. Then David ran and stood over the Philistine. He grasped his sword, drew it out of the sheath, and killed him. Then he cut off his head with it. So ends the reading.
That, of course, is the story of David and Goliath. Our bulletin cover today, a picture of the world, everybody holding hands. We're all gathered together peacefully. And I didn't know what Margie was going to choose for her entree, but we join our hands and hearts. What could be more appropriate for today? Today is World Peace Day. Peace is more than absence of war. Peace should be a sense of tranquility and freedom from fear. Our world is rather small, with everyone holding hands, and our world is getting smaller all the time. We are woven together economically. Now I've got to change. Okay, can you hear me? I'm going to go away from this mic. The jacket I'm wearing today came from India. My shirt, I got it from L.L. Bean, but it was made in Peru. My skirt is from China. I'm not going to show you my underwear, but it's from Mexico and Bangladesh. My shoes. Our SAS shoes, San Antonio shoes, made in Mexico. Not Mexico, made in Texas, San Antonio, Texas. They're made in America. My coat, my raincoat that I wore today, I've had it probably about 15 years, but it came from Thailand. My purse came from China. I think it's kind of a good match for my shoes. I got it this summer at a yard sale. But it came from China originally. So, not only are my clothes rather worldly, some of them are also recycled. Not necessarily so much with a vision of saving the environment, that's because they were so affordable. Less of a hit on my pocketbook. There are those who think that economic independence, interdependence, will lead us to peace. That would certainly be nice. I didn't have to go beyond my own closet to have an international wardrobe to wear this morning. And it all goes together. Isn't that curious? But we are also politically living on a small planet. Then David ran and stood beside him. He took Goliath's sword out of its holder and killed him by cutting off his head. David and Goliath. The little guy against the big guy. The good guy against the bad guy. And after all, God was on David's side. And when we read in the Bible about someone getting his head cut off 3,000 years ago, off in Israel somewhere, in a battle against the Philistines, whoever they were, it doesn't have much impact on us. However, it's a very different story when it's us here and now, if it's one of our own, someone we know or almost know, because it's a reporter from our own country, and it's now it's barbaric. You would think in this world we'd be more civilized, better behaved after 3,000 years, but it doesn't seem to be that way. In the 1500s, Henry VIII had two of his wives beheaded. However, we've developed better ways to kill people one at a time. Cutting off heads became quite efficient during the French Revolution with the perfection of the guillotine. 1793, 1794 in France, the Reign of Terror. French revolutionaries executed between 16 and 40,000 people. King Louis XVI and his wife Marie Antoinette went to the guillotine. But then again, that was 200 years ago. However, the last person to be guillotined in France was on September 10th, 1977. And then in 1981, France abolished the death penalty. Nazi Germany used the guillotine with 16,500 victims. They kept records. Switzerland used the guillotine for the last time in 1940. And then in 1996, not exactly ancient history, in the United States, Georgia State Representative Doug Tepper unsuccessfully sponsored a bill to replace the state's electric chair with a guillotine. We are inflamed, outraged over the killing of two journalists in August. But we've almost forgotten the journalist Daniel Pearl, who died the same way in 2002. Now there is an outcry, threats from the president and the politicians. The newspapers lead us toward war into believing we really must do something, and that something will have to be violent. How can we do that? We're not fighting an organized country. This is an elusive kind of war. We're fighting a disgruntled group of extremists, religious fanatics, fundamentalists. How do we deal with that? Probably not by doing what we have been doing. That hasn't worked. Remember Saddam Hussein? He was a bad guy for sure. We killed him, and bad things keep right on happening in his country. Osama bin Laden was the devil incarnate, and we managed to kill him too. And Hitler is dead, and Stalin is dead, and Genghis Khan is dead, and Attila the Hun is dead, and Goliath is dead. And we still don't have peace. Maybe we should try something else. We aren't the largest country on this earth, but we are the strongest. And our strength isn't enough to allow us to run the whole world our way. And what way is our way? I'm sure we would say peace, but peace doesn't seem to be our principal aim. We'd like to have peace, of course, because that would give us a certainty of enjoying our leisure and our stuff. I think economic gain, consumerism, capital gain, are what we as a nation are most interested in. As individuals, we are bombarded with invitations to get more and more stuff. We work two jobs so we can have more stuff, so our kids can have as much stuff as the other people's kids have. We rent storage units to house our extra stuff. We have yard sales when we get too much stuff. Then we sell our stuff for 10 cents on the dollar to make room for new stuff. There is no question but that we in the Western world are on a major consumerism binge. Most other countries couldn't even keep up with us. We don't think the country is healthy if there aren't enough new housing starts. While in the cities, there are houses in existence that are being vandalized beyond any possible future use. It just has to look like we have a values problem. It's not a question of killing ISIS. It's not a question of killing the bad guys. That doesn't work. It hasn't worked in the past, and it won't work in the future. We need to do something different. Maybe to really try peace, we need to understand how people think. What are they looking for in life? It's not hard for them to see what's important to us. The military-industrial alliance, shouts out for the entire world to see us as potential belligerents with a massive buildup of war machinery. In the year 2009, out of all the spending for military expenses in all the countries of the whole world, 46.5% of the total was spent by the United States alone. We spent almost half on war buildup of the entire world. Do we need to spend that much of the budget out of consideration of the whole world just for our country alone? 37 cents of every United States tax dollar is spent on current and past warfare. Past warfare because we owe interest on some old loans. While only 2 cents of every tax dollar is spent on diplomacy, international assistance, and war prevention. And although we call it a defense budget, would we really need that much to actually defend ourselves? Do the number of warships we have and are building really put America at risk when the United States battle fleet is larger than the next 13 navies combined? And 11 of those other 13 navies are our partners and allies. Or are we talking about the military-industrial complex that President Eisenhower warned us about back in 1951 in his departure address? And a sidebar. The defense industry tends to contribute heavily to incumbent members of Congress. And we should probably expand Eisenhower's caution about military-industrial complex to read industrial-military-media complex. Our society, our culture, is geared to keeping up our spending habits, or maybe I should say our spending addiction. Supposedly, we are creating jobs, and we are, at poor wages in places like China, where they, too, are now developing spending habits. We are also addicted to being entertained. Television with over 100 channels, computers, electronic toys, and devices beyond imaginations and cell phones that provide instantaneous contact with everyone and anyone, and games to play in between. The media, which manages to keep us scared most of the time, has been collecting newspapers, forgot to bring them up here with me, for the last month, and the headlines are scary. And these aren't terrible newspapers. It's from the New York Times, and New York Times is a pretty liberal newspaper, and the Wall Street Journal, which is a pretty conservative newspaper. But in both cases, take a look, just walk by the newsstand. The headlines are enough to really scare you. So they keep us scared. They keep us entertained. And we get to go on shopping trips to make us feel better. And that's how we live. As we know, the recent beheadings are horrible to contemplate. the president's popularity numbers plummeted when he didn't immediately send an army out to wipe out the bad guys. Remember, we just did that to get rid of the previous bad guy in Iraq. No sooner do we leave after an unpopular 10-year visit than new bad guys pop up. And ISIS is a descendant of Al-Qaeda. We killed their top bad guy, and here we are. What can we do? We can stop supporting the people who are supporting the terrorists. We can stop supporting the people who are supporting the terrorists. Gasoline consumption would be a good place to start. Our church is built in the old part of Cadillac. This was and is a nice part of town. Right next door is the funeral home, a mansion built for a private family. Up the street, the Mitchell House, another mansion. Look around you, nice houses, built close together with sidewalks. Sidewalks so one could walk to town, walk to shop, walk to visit. That's still possible in this part of town. People still do walk. But get away from the old district and the sidewalks disappear. I live pretty close to Kenwood School. And the children who live close enough to school to walk, maybe 2, 3, 4 blocks, have to walk in the streets. There's no sidewalks. They have to walk down the side of the street to get to Kenwood School. That shows you how our values are. Why don't we have sidewalks so the kids can walk to school in safety? No, either we're going to drive them with our gasoline or else they're going to have to walk in the street. Everyone drives anywhere. And walking doesn't have to become obsolete. The closets in these old houses don't amount to much either. A modern-day must is a house with generous closets, walk-in closets, to house more clothes than we wear, including all those that aren't the right size anymore. The closets in these old houses show us the change in our consumption habits. We have more and we owe more. The country is in debt. 17 trillion moving toward 18 trillion. That's a figure I don't comprehend, can't. I do know we owe most to China and Japan. We also owe money to oil-producing nations, Saudi Arabia and Iran. Fancy that, we owe money to Iran. It seems we should get our spending habits under control. And like most other things, we should probably start at home. And what does that have to do with peace? The Amish and the Quakers and the Buddhists would say quite a bit. Living the simple life, a life of peace at home, is a first step to living a simple life in the outside world. Stop buying into the idea that every act of violence must be counteracted with another act of violence. Filter the news media. They're required to love sensationalism to guarantee sales and profits. The recent beheadings are certainly awful, and they were designed to be. And then they are magnified by the media. Is it worthwhile to send hundreds, maybe thousands of young men and women to be killed in an attempt to avenge these two horrible acts? And for that part of violent aggression that is fueled by religious fanaticism, whether Islamic or Christian, we can't get into the trenches and fight it out with them. The sensible part of religion needs to have a stronger presence. The mainline churches need to be a relevant part of today's culture. Sermons with a contemporary message that makes sense. Ministers who understand the Bible as an attempt to explain unexplainable things. Ministers who understand the Bible as an attempt to explain unexplainable things. Welcoming people into an accepting congregation so they don't go off looking for acceptance in some gang membership. Giving up dogma and narrow-minded concerns about birth control, women as church participants, gender identity, and other issues that are at odds with how people actually live. Living a simpler life, viewing the media with a cautious eye, and promoting peace by living peacefully would be a good starting place. Amen.